Welcome back to the show. It's Panhandle Live. And again, our text line is open at 304-263-4321. And we hope you're hanging out with us next Monday night at Spring Mills' auditorium for that Stubblefield Institute conversation. But again, if you're not able to make it out in person, we will be airing it here on the Panhandle News Network, terrestrially on the radio, also streamed at the PanhandleNewsNetwork.com website. Late last week, didn't have the ability to have the governor on live, but Friday afternoon we were able to record with West Virginia's Governor Patrick Morrissey, and we'll play that interview for you back now. This is, again, West Virginia's Governor Patrick Morrissey.
Joining us via phone this morning, Governor Patrick Morrissey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's nice to connect with you. And when I'm not wearing an apron,
we should provide some context, because the last time we saw you was on Labor Day at the Labor Day breakfast at War Memorial Park.
Yes, I was on waiting tables duty, and that's always a nice event to come back and spend some time. And I try to get there virtually every year, and it's been so rewarding. You get to know so many people from Berkeley and the whole Panhandle, and people have had a good time for a good cause.
And Governor, before we dive into some of the issues we wanted to ask you about, the sports fan in me wants to know what it was like being down there at the 50-yard line. You'd talked about the backyard brawl being a pillar of your campaign, and you were down there on the field with Governor Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania, and obviously the Mountaineers pulled off that victory. I got to ask, you're amongst 62,000 West Virginians for a really important football game. What was that experience like?
Well, it was really incredible, and the most important thing I'll say is I got the coin flip right, so I did my part. And so obviously that played a key role in WVU's victory. But it was terrific to have our neighboring state's governor there, because what I said to him is, listen, we're going to disagree about a number of policy issues, but we're going to treat him with great civility and respect. That's what we did. I said the only place that we're not going to treat you with respect is on the football field, where we wanted WVU to crush Pitt, which, they did bring home the W. So that was really very good. And obviously people had a wonderful time at the game. It's just phenomenal to see how Morgantown becomes this massive city when you have a home game, especially a backyard brawl game. And I'm glad that they extended the backyard brawl contract out from 2032 to 2036. I think that game should be played every single year. And I'm a big believer that when West Virginia sports, WVU, Marshall, Shepherd, others, when we're doing well, it's actually great for West Virginia. And so these are exciting times, and certainly we're want to be successful in all aspects of West Virginia, but also including economics. And that's why I talk a lot about that economic backyard brawl, so we can keep lifting up our standard of living and get people the opportunity to have better jobs and the kind of take-home pay that makes a difference in their families' lives.
Another way to lift folks up is in their health care, and you announced pretty recently that you're hoping West Virginians can provide some input on some program money that's coming from what President Trump called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. It looks as though West Virginia could receive $100 million a year over a five-year period to boost up rural health care. First of all, how does that work, and where do you see this going?
Absolutely. So in that Big Beautiful Bill, President Trump had advocated for resources to go for rural health transformation. And as people listening know, West Virginia is the very definition of a rural state. And so we're excited because there are dollars available which could be put in place to not only invest in our workers, but to build out some of the data and technology infrastructure to really move the needle from a healthcare outcome perspective, whether you talk about addiction or diabetes or obesity or heart disease. We need to make sure that we're getting healthier. And so there is a program where there's an application that's due November 5th that we're asking people across the state to submit their ideas and let us know their thoughts about this program. And also we're going to leverage a lot of the work, because the private sector is leading the way from an innovation perspective. And we want to make sure that we're taking full advantage and building sustainable private sector programs. So The ultimate goal is to improve outcomes and have economic incubators that are creating new job opportunities for people. And that's such an important thing. It doesn't get talked about much when you talk about this big, beautiful bill, but this rural transformation, if we do it right, could really be one of the biggest economic development engines our state's had in a while.
Is there room in that tent? Because I hear you talking about programming and innovations and employment. Is there room under that tent with $100 million coming into the state to also make sure that folks who are kind of caught between programming and have not had access to a primary healthcare provider because they couldn't afford it, or they don't go to the doctor because they can't afford it, their place of employment doesn't offer a robust program for insurance. Is there a mechanism with that funding to help help some of those folks in rural areas actually have access?
There is. In fact, that's one of the goals of the program. We want to continually try to improve access to quality health care in a lot of the rural areas where, as many people know, it's just been difficult to attract people, whether we're talking primary health care professionals, doctors, sometimes it could be advanced practice nurses or physician assistants. So you want to look at ways you might be able to support the existing infrastructure in the rural areas, but also create type of structures that have the ability to really provide health care in a more cost-effective manner. That's why you look at telehealth, you look at virtual surgeries, you look at many different types of ideas that are going to make sure that we're looking out for patients first. So we're thrilled. We do think that if we do this right, it could really lead to some not only improvement in healthcare outcomes, but it could really make sure that access in West Virginia is vastly improved. But the way that's going to happen is through the input and the partnerships, what employers are doing, what the private sector is doing, bringing new tools to bear so that things can be done in a more cost-effective manner. You know, in America today, there's a lot of money that's spent on healthcare, but it's not always spent wisely. We have to make sure that changes. That's, I think, part of the goal of President Trump, and we certainly share that vision. You want to get people healthier, but you want to do it in the most cost-effective way possible.
Governor Patrick Morrissey is with us, and as we talk about healthcare, sir, obviously a lot of people's minds will turn to PEIA. Where do we stand in terms of a special session? I know interims just happened. I know that's a topic that's very much on your mind. Where do we stand?
Listen, we've continued to have good discussions, and we're going to eventually be making some of these changes, and we're just wanting to do this in a collaborative manner. But I know that there have to be some challenging decisions that get made to put our state in the right place to succeed long term. I want to make sure that we're getting to a place where we can match ongoing expenditures with ongoing revenue, and that you know that there's such a fiscally responsible budget that then when you have the big years that you saw, you can pour the dollars into economic development and to return money back to the people where the money belongs. And I certainly am pushing for that. And, you know, the challenge of the past is you'd have a lot of these dollars and they just get spent, but then you weren't really prepared when the federal money wasn't going to be available anymore. That's not what we're about. We're very fiscally responsible, and we want to grow, and those are the investments that we're making to make sure that we're seeing more innovation, private sector opportunities, high-paying jobs, and that we're making sure that families have the ability through their pay levels to afford the things to take care of themselves. That's so critical.
Governor Patrick Morrissey is on the phone with us this morning. Last night, we're speaking to you, this is a pre-recorded message, but on Thursday evening, the Capitol was host to a call to courage, honoring the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. First of all, what were your impressions of the evening, and how do you keep an event like that secure when you're inviting folks from all over the state?
Well, that was important. First, I want to salute the state police and all the law enforcement who worked hard to make that happen. There was a lot of preparation that went into it. And when you're talking about anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 people, that's a lot of work. And people get concerned because, quite frankly, some people have not handled the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's murder the right way. And so there are crazy people out there. And that's why it's so important to have preparation and good folks on the law enforcement side who are making all the arrangements to protect the citizens at large. So that event went off very smoothly. I think it was a great way to honor Charlie Kirk and what he stood for. We would all do better if we follow his motto in terms of civility, in terms of being a staunch advocate for your cause, but also being very respectful of the First Amendment. And so that's why we were thrilled to take part in that. And, you know, I knew Charlie. He was a friend of mine, and I think he'd be very happy that now, through his death, it's actually a catalyst for so many other young people to get engaged and then make sure that they're fighting for their principles the right way, treating people with civility and respect.
You know, one of the things I noticed on the social media coverage of this, a lot of folks complimented you for your brave stand, and it is brave in these days, as you mentioned, speaking from the scripture, talking about your faith. And we know that West Virginia, you know, not everyone is a Christian. Not everyone has a faith that is similar to yours. But why did you think that that was important in the light of Charlie Kirk's assassination?
Well, because I think Charlie was murdered and assassinated because of both his political and religious beliefs. And it's important that we show strength and we double down and we say we're not going to be cowed by these people that don't respect it, and that we're going to continue to speak out on important and tough issues. At the same time, you could do it the right way, and you could do it by showing respect and letting diverse perspectives be articulated. So I thought it was important to show that we're not going to be backing down. We're going to keep advocating very aggressively. Those of you who know, I fight pretty hard for West Virginia. I'm never going to back down. And, you know, a lot of people don't like that. Well, tough. West Virginia has an unbelievable future. And we also know that so many people in West Virginia respect religious liberty. That's central to West Virginia's character. So we want to show that and do it the right way. And I think you can have different perspectives, but be respectful about it. And I think Charlie would have tried to do that very thing.